Hello and welcome. You're listening to Speaking of Urology, the official podcast for Urology Times. As always, our commitment is to deliver urologists and allied health professionals timely and informative insights from leaders in the specialty. Our exclusive interviews bring expert analysis, practice advice, and policy perspectives to help our listeners practice more efficiently. I'm your host and associate editor, Hannah Clark. In this episode, I am joined by former Major League Baseball player Dave Winfield, who delivered a keynote presentation at this year's LUGPA annual meeting. Dave began his professional baseball career in 1973 when he was drafted by the San Diego Padres. Over his 22-year career, he went on to play for the New York Yankees, the California Angels, the Toronto Blue Jays, the Minnesota Twins, and the Cleveland Indians. In addition to his baseball career, Dave is well known for his charitable work. He became the first active athlete to create a philanthropic foundation, the David M. Winfield Foundation. During our discussion, Dave shared lessons learned from both his baseball career and his philanthropic work. Your presentation at this year's LUGPA meeting is titled Leadership Lessons Learned from Baseball, Business, and Philanthropy. Could you walk me through some of the key points that you plan to address during this talk?
Well, first, it's interesting to know that a urology group or association would want to hear about leadership, but I understand, you know, they bring together their groups and their smaller organizations, and they want to improve, they want to connect, and they want to be successful. And sports is really, there's so many life lessons, business lessons, philanthropic lessons you learn from playing sports. And mine started early. It's been a unique, diverse background, playing all kinds of sports, all kind of coaching, all kind of mentorship. And I've gone through very difficult times, even though people recognize me as a successful athlete and person. There are some very difficult times, and I'm going to share some of those when I speak later this week. And how did I overcome them? How did I deal with them? And how did I overcome them? And one thing I've not done before, I wrote an ebook when I was playing. People ask me, how do you continue to thrive or prosper or succeed when times are really, really difficult? And part of this book that I wrote is Winning It All. We call it Winning It All. And I'm going to share that with the group. Actually, I haven't done this before, but we'll use they'll be able to download it, you know, at the session. And so I'm just glad to share this with them. So that's something that's different. That's why it's not, like I said, normal stump speech, but I just want to share people some life lessons, and I'll say, I didn't know that. Well, that's unique. That's different. But there are some things that I learned, things that I follow, and things that I like to share with other people and see if it can motivate, inspire, help them prosper or succeed in whatever they're doing in life, whether they're young people, older people, businesses, etc.
Yeah, looking forward to hearing more insights at the meeting. I'm definitely looking forward to that discussion. You started your professional baseball career with the Padres in 1973. What were some of the biggest challenges that you faced in those early years, and how did you overcome them?
A number of things. I was a pitcher and a hitter all through college. And most people don't know that I pitched. Shohei Ohtani is doing what I was doing in college. He's doing it at an exceptional level at the high, you know, professional sports. But that's what I did. So I had a lot to learn. So I came in and sat with the veterans who were accomplished and professional the way they went around about their business. I came early. I stayed late, kept my mouth shut, and learned. And then there were particular challenges. I faced my boyhood idols. And what's that like when you step into a situation and you are opposed or on the other side of people who you really honored and respected and paid homage to? And for instance, there was a gentleman named Bob Gibson. He's one of the best pitchers of all time. And I'm facing him, and he's a tough competitor. And away from the field, I met him and he wouldn't talk to me because I was on a opposing team, and it shocked me. And so I said, I'm going to get this guy. And this is in a nutshell, I'm explaining this to you. So when I played against him, I wanted to really get him and prove my mettle and make him respect me. And the first time he struck me out, and I was upset about it. And then later, the next time I came up, actually, I hit a ball, I hit a home run and put us back in the game. And I walked around the bases, not entirely, but coming to home plate. And I pointed to him and told him, I'm here too. Like, give me some respect. And the guys on the bench said, Are you crazy as Bob Gibson? I said, Forget about Bob Gibson. Next time I came up, he knocked me down a couple of times. This is the way they used to play the game. They could do that. And, but it was like, maybe I belong if I can succeed against one of the best people in the history of the game. And so there's a lot of funny stories and interesting things, but I met the challenge, stepped up to a challenge and met it, and found out maybe I deserve to be here. I belong.
Yeah, that's a great story. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yes.
And like you've alluded to, you've had many monumental achievements throughout your career, including 3,000 hits and driving in the winning run for the World Series. So, could you share what these moments felt like for you and how they reflected your journey as a player?
Well, I'll give you the other side first. There were two things. I didn't fail a lot in life, but failing or coming up short made me work that much harder to grow, perfect my craft, and achieve the goals that I set out. One was early in my baseball career, they sent me to Mexico to refine and hone my skills. I only lasted a month. Now, it was my first year of professional ball. Everything was different. I didn't speak the language, the food I didn't adapt to, and I didn't play well. And they released me, sent me home. And in one sense, I was, oh my gosh, am I really ready for this next level? And the other thing was, I'm going to go home and work that much harder to prove that I should be there. And the second time that I ran up against a wall, if you will, and didn't succeed was my first World Series. And New York, we played the Dodgers just as they did this year. And I prepared the best way I knew how. I was ready, I was joyful. And I didn't have a very good World Series, and our team didn't win. And at the time, I was the highest paid player in the game, like this Ohtani and Judge and people that played in the World Series this year. And so you put that behind you and work hard. And years later, I was able to succeed. It took a decade, almost a decade, but I went to Toronto. And I was able to succeed, and all of a sudden, I'm the same person, same heart, same work ethic, and all that, and a different team, and a different place, and a different time. And we were able to win the World Series. I was a leader on that team all year, a leader at the end, and I will be forever grateful that I kind of fulfilled, I don't know if you call it destiny, but what I envisioned doing in the sport that I was playing. The high points in competition are great. They're fantastic because I envisioned them generations ago, before that, we would finish every practice on a high note. Men on base, game tied, late, boom, you get a hit. That's the way you go home. You don't go home, "Well, I swung and missed, I struck out, or I dropped a ball." And you go home and you dream about it. And you have to be positive in life. And in fact, one of the things that I was always very positive. People might say things to me if I wasn't hitting really well. They say, "You're in a slump." I said, No. It's a period of adjustment or statistically acceptable variation. Nothing goes up all the time. Stock market doesn't go up all the time. So I said, You're not good at people interviewing me. You're not good at what you do every day, are you?" And so I would always try to live in a positive space, be around people who were positive. And so doing things like 3,000 hits, I've kind of turned the tables on people who would question either my ability or my size. "You're too big to get a lot of hits. You'll never make 3,000 hits. How does that sound?" Or winning, "You're not a winner," or "You didn't win before." That doesn't determine your ultimate legacy, or how people view you. And it's not how I ever viewed myself. I always thought that I could accomplish a lot. And even though I had, and this is I'll talk about in my speech, my remarks, there were 10 years in New York. People could say, "Oh, that could be great." Those were the toughest times of my life. Playing for the leader, the owner of the New York Yankees, the things that he put me through, the things that I had to endure or face away from the field of play. So for 10, 12 years, they were the worst times of my life. But I never quit. I never rolled over. I never gave in. I never let anyone else determine. They were trying to determine my destiny, which, and that would not have been good. My legacy, they painted it very negative. And I really began to, I blossomed after I left New York. I played for four more teams for 6 years. And they embraced me. They lifted me up. Things that I never got during a decade of playing baseball in one spot. And I was just determined to apply whatever I knew how to do to, I don't know, ensure that I reached the heights or the destiny that I envisioned. And there is, when I give away my ebook, there's a section that I call 40 Reasons for Strength. And, it has to do with leadership or becoming all you can be, become or be. And I think people will get a lot out of that because everybody would ask me when I played, "How do you manage this? How do you deal with it? Why don't you just flee and go somewhere else and enjoy life, enjoy coming to work every day?" And I said, "Nah, no one's going to run me out of town. I'll leave on my own. I'll choose the time and place and the method that I leave." And I did that, but I had to dig down deep because I was an older player. I left, I was 36, 37. And I played until I was 42 to get everything out of my body that I could. And then by the time I finished playing, I was happy. I was pleased. I was fulfilled.
Yeah, I love that mindset that you described. Those are really important lessons. So I appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, so as you mentioned, throughout your career, you've played for several teams, including the Yankees and the Blue Jays. How did you adapt to different team cultures and dynamics?
All teams are very different. Although there are only 30 professional teams, the culture is always different. The leadership is different. The facilities are different. The players are different. The league, Major League Baseball, continues to evolve. It changes its rules. There used to be a different rule for American League would have a designated hitter. National League didn't have it. I mean, rules change now, but you have to learn to adapt to them, and that's all the people that you face that are your competitors. You have to adapt. You have to. It's about continuous learning, adaptation. It's about your fitness, your physical fitness, and I focused on that throughout my career, my mental health. People know more about those things today, but I had a strong countenance, and I was somehow I was able to jump across that river, put down a bridge to make it, because it's tough what you do in professional sports. We make it look easy, but it's very difficult. But fortunately, my attitude, the way I communicated with people, the way I related to people, it was, and then having success on the field and off the field, it was equivalent. That's some of the leadership that these other teams, they wanted. And most clubs need a person who's done it, been there, done that, and don't mind sharing it. And I just tell you one thing, though, a young man, when I was early in my career and starting to become an all-star, first or second year out of 12 in a row, a young man came and tried to make the team that year. And, I talked to all the young guys, make them feel comfortable and make them fit in. And I said, "What position do you play?" He said, "Oh, right field." I said, "Well, you better think about another position because this one's taken for the next decade." And I have to laugh about it now because I was being very honest with him. As long as I'm there, I intend to have that spot. So he worked on a new position and made it there, but it wasn't going to be where I was. But of all the things that I'll talk about, even though there were some negative things, there were some very positive things. It was just the other side of the coin. And I love sharing, the life lessons, overcoming pressure and difficulties and all that, and hope people can apply it to their lives. So, I mean, I enjoyed what I did. 22 years. Six teams, both leagues, both coasts, and both countries. And I tried to add it up somewhere, but I probably had and played against 800 guys. And so I'm anywhere in the world, and someone would come up to me, "Dave, how you doing?" And I'm thinking, "Ooh, who is that? What team was that? What year was that?" But it's been fun. It's been great. So I mean, I look forward to sharing what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm also going to do. I'll probably let, I don't like to just talk to people. I like to talk with them. So I may say, open up for a few questions and answers. They can ask me anything, and I enjoy that as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. Any location that you'd say is your favorite?
I'll be quite honest, the one year I played in Toronto, that was my favorite year. Not only because we won the world championship, it was the first time that a Canadian team had ever won in baseball. They won two in a row, but that was the first they ever won. And the people were gracious. It's a world-class city. And those guys who we won the championship will forever be my brothers, because we're in the trenches. You're battling, you're playing, and you're going through the ups and downs of the season. So when I finished playing, I was we didn't win the first World Series, Yankees Dodgers, The second one we did that I played in, we did win, Toronto versus Atlanta. And then the third one, my very last year in Cleveland, we had a special team and I was injured. And so I lost one, won one, and was injured for one. So I guess I covered the whole gamut there.
That's great. Yeah, I'm like I said, I'm from Ohio, so I'm always impartial to Cleveland, but
Yeah. They were very hospitable, very nice, and we had a great team, but we just couldn't take it all the way.
Yeah, big sports city here. Yeah, you kind of mentioned this a little bit, but could you share a specific moment in your career where you faced adversity and what you learned from that experience?
It wasn't one thing. If I mean, I had the first surgery that I ever had was back surgery. It was my ninth year in New York, so I was probably, I'll have to think of how many years, probably 15 years into the game. I didn't know if I'd return. You never know. That's a delicate situation. I had a violent swing. I really sw swung hard. I'm a big guy, a lot of torque. And but I was able to do that. And I thank all the physicians that helped me get right, come back. And actually, I saw that doctor the other day at a football, was it? No, at one of the World Series games. Hadn't seen him since surgery. Mid in 19, was that 1989? And I saw him and I thanked him profusely for getting me through that. That was one thing. And was there anything else? Not winning the World Series, the first one, that was difficult. And I think I mentioned the other one where after my first year, I think I'm on my way up, and they sent me home after a month because I couldn't handle it. You can't handle it. It wasn't the pressure. I didn't speak the language. I'd never been to these faraway places. I didn't have anybody to accompany me to help me get through these difficulties. And I was in a learning phase of baseball. And let me say this, which reminds me that I was always making incremental progress. I didn't know it all when I got there. It took me 10 years, and there were about a dozen people that gave me a nugget, a bit of wisdom, experience, knowledge that I applied, and that improved, modified, changed my game. If I never listened to anybody and tried to make it on my own, I don't think I would have had the, I know I wouldn't have had the success that I did. And I appreciate them. I had a mentor playing the game, and he was just very helpful. There's a certain practice that I did, to replicate, to know and how to replicate everything that I need to do when I'm going well. What's in my head, what's in my heart, and technically, what am I doing right? Because sometimes outside advice, they're not hitting the mark. They can see something from the outside, but they don't know what's going on inside your body, the inner workings. And I was able to do something, a unique practice that enabled me to not need as much coaching or guidance or that type of stuff on a certainly not on a daily basis. When I finished, I said, "This is what you're supposed to do, and you're making it happen." So it and that went with so the first half of my career, I learned it. The second half, I applied it, and no one even plays. The average player plays 4 years. And so I learned this at the 10-year mark. It's something that I did.
Yeah, I appreciate you sharing those experiences and those lessons. I want to switch gears a little bit. You're also known for your charitable work. So could you
Yes.
discuss a particular initiative or cause that is especially meaningful to you and why?
Well, I was actually the first professional athlete that I know of that had their own nonprofit operating foundation, 501c3. And I did it because I knew that there were I was going far, achieving success on the backs of other people. There were people that preceded me. There were people that had been through tough times or whatever. But if I was able to, when I was able to have a modicum of success where people would look up to me, I said, how do I give back? And so it was through, and it was always in my mind about service to others, helping others. It wasn't just about me. And that started with family and community, and times were different. I grew up in kind of more of a, I'd say a pretty, I won't say tight-knit community, perhaps St. Paul, Minnesota. You knew the neighbors. We knew one another. You knew the mayor, the police chief, the school teachers lived in the community. The dads were the coaches, you know, things of that nature. The Parks and Rec department was great. And I think all of those people and things poured into me. And when I was successful, I wanted to give back. But I helped people that stand out, like Arthur Ashe, you know, the successful African-American tennis player, Martina Navratilova. I helped her. When she came over and started winning all these tournaments, I knew her from New York, and she watched many of the things that I did. How do you do this? There were a few people, skeptics out there. Why do you do this? And I'd look at them quizzically and say, it's just me. There's no scam. There's no, it's just, that's what I did. And those kinds of things, whether I made it and had a name that would last through generations, I didn't know that. But, you know, for I found out that even giving back, it kind of helped me be a better player. You know, I know that if I was successful, people would follow, they would listen. So all these so many programs I did over the years, I had good games before then. So when I came in, if I was hitting 210, they weren't going to come and listen. So I just looked at it and said, let me do something good today so I can walk in and everybody's excited. And it today, you know, my children, I can go to almost anywhere in the United States anyway, and someone will know me for the work that I did on behalf of others. They knew it wasn't just about me. It was about community service to others. And there's one other element, aspect of this service to others, not only through charitable foundation, the Winfield Foundation. There are a couple of elements, but the other one is working with the Baseball Players Association, the union. Because when I started, players made nothing. You weren't going to get rich. You didn't play to be rich or, you know, have a million followers on social media. It was you love the game and you're fortunate to do what you did. But most people left the game and they had no security going forward. You had to have a job in the off season when I started. So I always paid attention as to not only where we were as players, but where we could be if we stuck together and asked for something fair for everybody. I just happened to be at a period of time where it was contentious in baseball. It really, it's never going to be perfect because it's management and people who are employed by them. And, you know, so that's never going to be always hugging and kissing. The sides aren't going to do that. But I went through more potential and real work stoppages than almost anybody in the history of the game. Six times in my career. I mean, from being one of the lowest paid players to the highest paid player. But you had to make a commitment and believe and stick together and accomplish things. So let me just say that one thing, the thing I'm really proud of in that respect, there were less than 10,000 players that had ever played Major League Baseball when I started. And we used to assign numbers, but now there's so many guys that come through, they go up and they go down. It's hard to keep track of the numbers. But since then, there are more than 10,000 other players who have families that they're domestic, international. Now they can play the game and at least have an opportunity to, when they leave the game, to have some substance, to take care of their family or do something else. But before, it used to be, you're not going to make much money, you're not going to play very long, enjoy yourself. And so I experienced that as much. And guys know that how long I've been committed to that. Because even as we speak today, I'm an advisor to the executive director of the Players Association. And so I see what happens to and for all these guys. So, sometimes you battle, sometimes you just negotiate or talk. And you just try to make protect and preserve the rights and the benefits of the players, what they've achieved. So I'm really proud of that. And like I say, on the other side of it, there were some real difficult times. Being the highest paid player, and you have to go on strike and miss a third of the year, a third of your pay. That's just one instance. I said six times we went through that. So you know I must be committed to the cause.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you sharing those experiences. Definitely great work that you've done both throughout your career and the work that you just described. So appreciate you sharing that. Yeah, if you could go back and give advice to your younger self early in your career, what would you say?
That's a good question, and as I think about it, the one thing I tell other young people is, learn what you need to do to succeed quickly. And if you don't want to be at a point in life where you say, I wish I knew back then what I know now. You're avoiding that. But on the positive side, you're trying to learn it quickly. If that means, I guess, reading books, talking to mentors and positive people who have succeeded, them being role models. It's continuous learning, application of what you've learned. It's like I said, I learned what I learned in baseball to play it the way I did. It took 10 years to do everything that I did for the next 12 years. And if you can condense that learning period, just don't be caught saying, well, I wish I knew that. I back then what I know now. Try to learn it now. And I think I tried to do that, but still it takes, as I said, you heard me say, I've had an extensive and expensive education. Some things you just have to go through. People can talk to you all you want, but sometimes you have to go through it. But you have to experience it. So I think that's what I would say.
You just heard an exclusive interview with former MLB player Dave Winfield on the lessons he's learned from baseball and philanthropy. Be sure to subscribe to Speaking of Urology on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps. You can get the latest in urology news, practice management advice, and health policy updates by visiting our website, urologytimes.com, or by following us on X, formerly Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook at Urology Times. Thank you for listening.